Thanks for coming under such a short notice. I know everyone's had a really long week, and if any of us look a little rough, I guess everyone else in the room understands why. My name is Nigel Parry, N-I-G-E-L-P-A-R-R-Y. I traveled here with Twin Cities Indie Media from the Minnesota. We had the Republican National Convention in 2008, and it was a very similar experience to Pittsburgh. And these national special security events tend to leave a similar pattern. They're like tornadoes that come through town. And while they definitely bring business to the town at some levels and raise the profile of towns to an international audience, they also leave behind them a large bunch of legal problems for people and a lot of people traumatized by what happens to them, because there tends to be patterns in the police. My background's in alternative media. I created the first alternative news website in 1996 from a war zone. During shock and awe in Baghdad, we had an unembedded team of citizen journalists on the ground with a satellite data modem and produced the award-winning alternative media sites Electronic Iraq, Electronic Intifada, and Electronic Lebanon. So my background is pretty much communications, journalism, and alternative media. We traveled here to the G20 with a large contingent from the Twin Cities, from Twin Cities Indie Media and the Glass Bead Collective from New York, who are between them the makers of the film Terrorizing Dissent, which is a documentary that's 2 hours long about the Republican National Convention. We were also helped by...
Website?
Terrorizingdissent.org is the name of the website. We're going to call on a bunch of people here today who have, from the Thomas Merton Center, from the Three Rivers Climate Camp, that was given a permit, but then the police on the ground during the summit revoked it and confiscated their property. You're going to hear from journalists who were arrested, and we're going to show you some video. And we're also going to introduce you to two people who were present at the Friday night events down by the university. Nathan Lanzendorfer and Harvey Holtz. So without any further ado, I'm going to call on Melissa Hill, because we want to underline the whole issue of press freedom here. Whatever happens in these events, whatever your opinion is about these national special security events, we're not going to learn anything about them, and there's not going to be any freedom of information when journalists are targeted, when they're arrested, when they have their cameras broken and their footage confiscated. And Melissa's one of 6 cases we've heard of so far where the same thing happened. So I'm going to ask Melissa to come down.
Hello, I'm Melissa Hill, M-E-L-I-S-S-A Hill, H-I-L-L. And I was working with Twin Cities Indie Media out of Minneapolis, and I was covering the event on Friday night at Oakland, in the Oakland area. And I was mass arrested during that time, and when I was mass arrested, they took my camera away from me, and they also just took my videotape of the footage, and I have not received that back. Basically, we were mass arrested. I was taking a lot of filming of this arrest. I was taking a lot, whatever I could. In the moment they confiscated my camera, I had to basically beg to get it back. Eventually, I did get the camera back with no footage anymore. The DVD that was in it was missing, and it was also broken. My camera right now is not recording. It was basically destroyed during this process. And also...
Talk about the threatening with the guns.
Oh, yeah. Basically, before the arrest that evening, it was a very, what I call, tense and threatening situation. They were trying to move us around. There were, like, many instances of medics trying to help people who were injured and just quickly moving us. They were being very threatening with their... with basically their non-lethal weapons and their rubber bullet guns, kind of pointing them at people at close ranges, and I was getting this stuff on film. There wasn't a huge media presence towards the end where I was mass arrested. There was a couple of journalists there, but They basically were not paying attention to us. I mean, many of us had press passes on. I had a press pass on. I did indicate I was a journalist. There was at least three other journalists, I think, who were arrested with me. And they were just basically indiscriminately surrounded us. I mean, it was many students, journalists, a lot of medics, and maybe a couple of protesters who were completely confused and wondering why we all got arrested then.
Talk to the police. This is not the first time we've heard about a journalist being arrested for MG20. So talk to the police about this, and their side is that they make an announcement to disperse, and they don't care who you are. If you don't disperse, they're going to arrest you. You call it a mass arrest, but they call it also. They just arrested anybody who refused to disperse. Their response is, why should you be different? If you're refusing to disperse, why should you not be arrested?
I saw a few instances where they actually did let a few people go, and I think there's instances where they like said, hey, you don't have to get arrested, because they do sometimes seem to have like some discretion on who they can and cannot arrest. And I think being a journalist and being someone who's there to try to cover this, especially when you have press passes on, when you have identification, identifying who you are, that should be obvious that you are there just basically to cover this. You're not participating in the protest. You're not doing any of that stuff. You want to be the eyes for the whole entire world to see what's going on. And I think it's very unreasonable that they don't, you know, make the decision that, hey, you have a press pass, why don't you just let you go then?
Press pass issued by what organization?
Twin Cities Indie Media.
So self-issued press pass.
Twin Cities Indie Media issued press pass.
Yeah.
Twin Cities Indie Media is
the same.
Yeah.
Post Gazette, so.
In terms of notice, when we were at these hours out there Thursday, when they would have this big bullhorn saying this has been deemed a illegal assembly and you are to move or else you'll be arrested, how much notice did you get from that?
There was some notice earlier that evening, but they'd been moving people around, so it was hard to say if a lot of people in that group had any notice, because they were, you know, the lines of riot cops were kind of shifting around the campus area, so it's always different groups of people kind of merging, new people coming in and out of dorms. So, I mean, it's hard to say, like, if a lot of people even heard that actual announcement that was earlier that day by the plaza.
Did you hear it?
I heard it because I was covering the event down there, but I was arrested in a little bit different area, so...
I mean, here's the bottom line: is this is happening in public spaces, okay? This is not happening on a lot of this was happening on streets around the university. It's a public university, and if journalists are going to be shooed away when police start arresting people, then there's no public record of what's going to happen, and there's no accountability for them. None of the riot police during the entire summit had any identifying markings on them. The regular police officers had little sort of cards attached to their arms, which was great. You don't often see that, actually. But none of the riot police had any identifying marks whatsoever. And that creates this climate of unaccountability and impunity. And that's a climate which allows the kind of abuses which we're going to see in a minute in the video to happen. And that's why it's important to have journalists there.
When were you given your camera?
What?
Yeah, I mean,
were you giving your camera back?
I was given my camera back after going through the arrest process. Basically, I was taken to like a detainment unit. They had both civilian and military personnel kind of watching over us at this jail cell, and basically they released our stuff with us. And when I got my camera back, somewhere between being arrested and when I got it back, the disc has been missing. I have not retrieved the disc of the footage that evening. I find that's probably the most outrageous thing that happened to me that evening, is that I do not have this footage. I have no idea where this footage is. They did not give us any kind of evidence sheet listing everything that we had or didn't have, so I do not have footage of what I took that night.
What were your charges?
I right now don't have any charges that they let me aware of. They just kind of let some of us out and they didn't give us charges. I don't know if I'm going to be charged at a later date or not, but I don't have a charge right now.
Did you ask for any kind of papers?
They didn't give us any papers, no. So they just kind of let us go out of the facility with basically giving us a vague.
How long were you in police custody?
was in police custody for probably about six hours.
And you were held in the jail, or you were held, some people were held on buses for a while?
It was, I think they called it SCI Pittsburgh, that facility. It was, you know, a process of being held on a bus for maybe, you know, an hour or so, basically getting to the facility and then sitting in chairs for another, you know, few hours.
Have you made a request for your disc?
Yes, I still need to. I'm going to make a request formally for the disc.
The broader question is, given some of the things that I know, I guess, will lead up to this, are there going to be legal action, either civil action, federal court, or going to the Pittsburgh Citizen Police Review Board to request action or an investigation of the actions of police?
Personally, I'm going to kind of review those options and see which one's the best in my case, what makes most sense. So I need to kind of still talk with an attorney about this. So,
I mean, the bottom line with journalism is this country has a First Amendment, which is supposed to be inalienable. And First Amendment activities would include journalism and or citizen journalism. I mean, anyone, Joe Schmo, is allowed to stand and say whatever he wants theoretically in this country.
Yeah.
Now, part of the issue here is the process of collecting data, whether it's video material or standing there with a notebook or taking audio or camera shots, is a part of the process of creating something that's a First Amendment right. So if you start taking away the process by which someone makes a First Amendment action, then that's an abrogation of their rights. And that's very serious. Free people in a free country should be free to use a video camera. If they're standing in the middle of the road or something else, if there's a dangerous situation, fine. But these situations that I witnessed on Friday night, for example, at the University of Pittsburgh, the police were beating people and gassing people who were wandering out of restaurants. They were beating and gassing people and arresting people who were trying to get home to their dorms. I mean, there was no demonstration going on. There were no protests going on for most of Friday night. It was just, it's a restaurant district. It's a residential district. You know, this was not a plaza where there was this mass gathering. Most of what happened around the plaza, to the west of the plaza, in the kind of Oakland, Bouquet, that kind of area, along Forbes and Fifth. Okay.
All right.
Can you roll the tape video? We're just going to show you a brief video shot by one of our people.
Who's the shot by?